You are listening to a Banzai Retro Club podcast. Language and topics may not always be appropriate for younger listeners. Press 1 for a groovy topic from the 1970s. Press 2 for an awesome topic from the 1980s. Or press 3 for a slamming topic from the 1990s. Please choose now. Too late. We have made your selection for you. Let's start the show.
Hey, how's it going?
Creed.
Hey.
How you doing, brother?
Not too bad. Thanks for having me on.
Dude, man, that's awesome that you're making time for us. God, it's so great to finally talk to you.
Yeah, I'm just kind of usually a lurker in the background, but I figure I got to jump in on something.
This is awesome, though. How's your weekend been going?
Pretty good so far.
Okay.
How's yours?
I can't complain. Friday was a bit of a rough work day, but the weekend's been solid, so I can't complain.
Right on.
Yeah. Scott, you on?
I am. Can you hear me okay?
We hear you fine.
Yep.
Awesome. So, Creed, just to bring you up to speed, I'm doing a new mic tonight. Or a mic that I've tried in the past that didn't work with the previous computer. It was making my voice sound very weird. So we are working this now tonight. So it sounds like it's pretty good. I just checked. Dave and I did a little test call just a few minutes ago, and sounds like it sounds pretty good. So I'm just hoping my volume is loud enough. If not, I can always go back on, or we can bump it up in Audacity if I have to on my end.
Yeah, no.
How's my audio? Can you guys hear me fine? Or
yeah, I hear you great.
Oh, go ahead.
Yeah, I think both of you are you're good. Even though like a minute ago when Scott was talking, I had like a breakup, but my computer says poor connection. So hopefully my internet's not getting too flaky on me right now.
Right on.
Yeah, you know about that, Scott.
Oh yes, I know all about that. That was fun. That was a fun episode.
So Creed, how long have you been doing the artistry stuff? Has that been something that's you work on professionally, or is that just something you're doing as a part-time passionate kind of thing?
It's kind of my whole life and none of that stuff. It's I don't know. I kind of can't say like, oh, I do it for a living or I don't. It's different than that. It's everything I do has to do with my art. It's kind of a weird, flaky way to look at it, but my art's just, that's why I'm here.
Okay.
Make some art. So I kind of like, I have had different jobs that are differently related. That, like I've done tattoo design, murals, a little bit of jewelry design, web design, graphic design. I just do art. Sometimes it's for money, and in between that I make it myself.
all right, very cool. And obviously like retro cartoons has been your deal.
I've always been brutally pulled away from the 80s by time itself, and I count every day I'm further apart from it. That's just how it works.
I love your stuff though.
I sit and I look at modern things through exactly, if you just grab somebody from the 80s and pull them through a door and show them it, they'd be like, I feel exactly the same way. I turn on TV and it's like science fiction every day now.
I did make that comment. As soon as you start going more towards the Thundercats thing and maybe a little bit more away from Motu, I'm going to be snagging up some of those stickers.
I have plans for, like, I've been sort of avoiding all the really large shows that have, like, 100 people I want to draw. So, like, Master Universe, Thundercat, stuff like that, I just touch a little bit. But some of those shows I'm going to really super dig into. I think Master Universe I'm only going to do all headshots just to do something different. But, Thundercats are, this is all plans, though, who knows. Like, right, the thing I'm working on right now is a logo for a company that was in my hometown that went out of business. So only like people within 50 miles would want it. I don't know.
You know, I saw that the other day. There was a place that was saying retro radio t-shirts. So it had like the logos of past radios that have, you know, radio stations that have now defunct.
Yeah, and if you listen to that, that's the audience. Like, it's not for everybody. If somebody look and go, I never heard of that, okay. But if you heard of it, it would blow your mind. It's sort of a really, really sharp edge on what I already do. Like, I already pick, like, I'll pick somebody in the background of some cartoon from the 80s, and it'll blow somebody's mind that that was their favorite character, and they didn't think anybody else even remembered. That's kind of what I'm doing with this, is this business, it's, like, famous in my town. So as soon as I make this sticker, everybody's going to go crazy.
Oh, okay. And
I live on retro, the power of retro.
Yeah, Scott, this sort of applied to you, but when I was talking about the radio stations and all that, there was like a old Retro the Loop t-shirt.
Oh yeah, really? And
I was like, oh, Scott would love that.
The Loop, yeah, that was a good one. WLUP. That was sad that finally ended. That was like 40 years of the same radio station, basically. Rock and roll for a long time.
But, you know, same thing. Same thing like you're talking about, Creed, where we're just kind of, you know, trying vicariously to live through the good old days.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I get it. And, well, that's pretty much our mission here, so.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
You guys actually, when you guys failed me and invited me into the group, I was getting ready to ditch Twitter because there was nothing on here any good. And then I was like, hey, there's all these like retro maniacs on here. I'm going to stick around. You guys are really the reason I stuck around on this crazy thing.
Hey, cool. That's awesome to hear.
Yeah. Retro maniacs. I like that one. That's a good term.
That's what I call everybody that's interested. If anybody's interested in anything retro, that's what I call them. They're all retro maniacs. Oh, my.
Yeah. It's a term of endearment. That's a term of love.
Oh, is it
right
ever?
There. Yeah.
So, Creed, you mind if I ask how old you are?
I am going to be 46 this year.
Okay.
So I was born 74.
Yep.
He-Man came out 83, 84, which I was 10, which is the exact perfect age. Like, it's Lou Scheimer's window. He always talked about. He'd see people come up, and if you're below a certain age, you walk by and go, interesting cartoons and whatever. And if you're above a certain age, this certain window of people, like 10 years, come by and they'd be like, oh, crap, it's Lou Scheimer. And he'd be like, those are my people, that window. I'm in Scheimer's window.
Interesting. That's funny. Yeah, I was 9 when Star Wars came out. So it was perfect timing for that window, too, for me, you know, just getting into sci-fi and all that stuff. So, I was born in 68, so I'm a little bit older, but totally. I was in high school in the 80s, so that's how impressionable that was. So that's why I think I focus a lot towards music of the 80s, because when you're in high school, I think that's when your music formative years are.
Oh yeah, like and I pretty much do through the lens of animated stuff, because that's sort of it's almost like, okay, what you were into. Like, I was more into the animated stuff because of my age at the time. Mm-hmm. But I mean, after a while, the 80s becomes all this other stuff that you didn't watch, and you go back and you watch it. Like, there's still meat on that bone.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, and that's something that, you know, we've discovered, like, doing the podcast. It's, you know, there's so much stuff to talk about, you know, even when we were just doing the 80s. You know, that's like a bucket that was going to continually give us content.
Oh, you can cover everything.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And now that we're on 70s and 90s also, it's like, yeah, this train will never end. You know, there's so much stuff.
That's what I found, too, is limiting just to 80s. 80s is, I think, the gold mine of where all the, like, algorithms and stuff. If you say 80s, that's the thing. But yeah, you include like 70s and 90s now and just say retro, it's a wider audience. I think it works good.
Yeah, definitely. Even though I think there's a lot of 90s content that, like, because, you know, Suzanne, Scott, and I were older, you know, in the 90s. And so I don't think we're ever going to get into a topic where we're talking about the children programming of the 90s. Because that wasn't our wheelhouse.
That's where a lot of it lost. Like, I always look at it like a tower. Like, 80s is the tower. Like, I'm probably 98% of what went on in the 80s I'm a fan of. And then like the 90s would be like 78%. And then the like after that, everything is lower. And now I'm down to I'm running on like 5% in the modern day. But there's some really there's an awesome 5%. But I mean, there used to be an awesome 95%. So,
right.
You know. No. That's why I miss the old days. It's the whole reason. You know, the stuff was better.
We all feel the same. Yeah. Scott, you were going to say something there.
Oh, I wanted to go back just to throw a little something Creed's way. I always remember my favorite animated stuff back in the early 80s was like Star Blazers and Voltron and that early section of like what we call now anime, right? Those are just some of my favorites from back before, you know, I started growing out of the cartoon phase and into the music and computer games. I started getting into computer games more so. So like with the, like my Dave and I have talked about the, when we had our Apple IIe computers and played a lot of those games. So
I'd say in the 90s, I was mostly comics and PC games. Were my like main thing by then. Cartoons were phasing out. Like the stuff like Nickelodeon, the most like I guess the best of that is probably the stuff I was like, that's good. But then the rest of it I wouldn't watch. Like because by then I was, you know, it was time to get into something else.
Right.
I will say I did start getting into. I liked some of the more adult humor that they started throwing into animation or cartoons, like Ren and Stimpy and Pinky and the Brain. And that kind of stuff. I know that was later in the mid to late 90s. Yeah.
The 80s, I would say, and even though I would fight and say the stuff's not crap, I would say in the 80s, I probably watched still a lot of crap and enjoyed it just because it was 80s. Like it had there's inside the fence and there's outside the fence. If it's 80s, I can't judge it. I just can't, you know, it's 80s. Yeah. It gets past 80s music. I'm sure a lot of it's dreck, but if it's from the 80s and my brain turns on that light and goes, oh, that's an 80s song. Okay. I'll listen. I'm not going to go, oh, this is terrible or not. It's 80s. I don't judge it. So, right but on. Outside of that, like the 90s, okay, the judgment light comes on and I'm like, I don't have time to watch whatever, Two Angry Beavers or I don't like just, and I'm sure a lot of this stuff is great and you go back later and you might discover it again, but it's just a priority. Like, you know, 90% of your life isn't cartoons anymore. So you have to start cutting back and only pick what you really want to watch.
Yeah. It's really interesting to see the progression of style throughout the decades of how cartoons have changed so much.
I like the progression, but then every once in a while, I don't even know where it comes from. All of a sudden, everybody will be like, oh, we're going to draw in this crazy new way, just all of a sudden, and it's not a good way. And I'm like, okay, somebody was trying to be funny. Like, somebody thought, like, oh, I'm going to draw, like, Fred Hembeck as a joke. And everybody was like, oh, we're going to make it a Scooby-Doo show like this. And it's like, oh, man.
Right.
And I think a lot of it, and I understand from a business standpoint, okay, let's say you're making Scooby-Doo show A. And that's over. The ratings went out like every show eventually would burn out, some too early. But I mean, okay, that drops. You have to make a new Scooby-Doo show. You can't just financially go to the guys with the money and go, we're going to make it. It's going to be drawn just like this show that just went off the air. It's going to have the same voice actors. We're going to tell the same story. They'll be like, oh, we just canceled that. Like, you know, so they have to make it different. They have to. And I hate that every time. But after a while, all the Scooby-Doos have grown on me. So it works. But it's just a business thing. Like, they have to do it to keep it alive.
Right. Yeah, I would argue about the one that they were doing with the Thundercats. I forgot what they called it. But
there's really upsetting ones. And I, as an old man, get really upset more by so much of these that really there's only like one or two remakes that I would say I'd like. The rest, I just go, not for me.
Right.
At all. Like, you know.
Yeah, it's like I already got the content I needed. I'm good. I'm moving on. You know, if you guys want to watch it and keep that going, then go ahead. That's for you. That's not for me. That's the way
my
I look at it.
My policy is rewatch, don't remake.
Yeah.
Like if it's so amazing, oh, I can't believe it's so amazing. They're making a remake of it. Okay, if it's that amazing, go back and watch it. No.
Yeah. The one comment that you made earlier, though, I've got to disagree with. Rubik's Cube. I don't No, I'm not giving that a pass, even though it was 80s.
I watched whenever it was on with a smile and didn't even question it. Oh,
dude.
Some of these things from the modern day, I don't remember being around back then. Like, people say, oh, Transformers versus GoBots. Or they'll say, like, everybody hates the Ewoks, or everybody hates Scrappy-Doo. None of those things. I watched all those things with a smile on my face and never thought a second thing of it. These are modern, like, looking back, people are like, yeah, he was annoying. Well, yeah, you watched it when you were a kid. You didn't care.
Scrappy was the equivalent to Jar Jar Binks, probably. So.
I watch now, and he's bad. He's real bad. But that was if I was going to watch a new Scooby-Doo show, that was the show that was on, like, most of the 80s. Right. There was something Scrappy. With Scrappy in it. Yeah. I was just like, okay, that's Scooby-Doo, you know.
But then again, I'm a big fan of, like, Thundercats, and I hate Snarf. So, you know, I would say
the worst sidekick, the most annoying of anything I've ever watched, the one that, like, made me rage, Mr. Cool from Happy Days, the time travel. Mr. Cool, and I know he's just there to cause the trouble, and then they fix it and whatever, but I want to beat Mr. Cool within an inch of his life every time I watch that show. So... like, that's worse than Snarf. Snarf, I'm like, oh, damn you, Snarf. But no, like, I don't want to beat Snarf within an inch of his life. Mr. Cole would not probably not survive if he had to stay with him. Like, the Fonz better not drop off Mr. Cole at my place for the week, because he won't get him back. Damn you, Mr. Cole. Your name taunts me, Mr. Cole.
I had so forgotten about that time traveling Fonzie show. Yeah,
it's a good show, but they have to tone down the sidekickness on Mr. Cole. That's all they had to do, you know, over the top.
Yeah, I know. We even had Dukes of Hazzard had their own cartoon
with authentic Coy and Vance on the show. I mean,
yeah,
hey,
yeah,
you know, the Dukes,
the second Dukes, at least. Wow, yeah, so many great memories of that. I almost feel like we could fill a whole episode just talking cartoons.
Oh, don't even get me started on cartoons. But yeah.
But we are here for Last Starfighter. So you guys want to go ahead and get started with that?
Yeah, yeah. That's cool. I just rewatched it today, so I'm fresh on the.
Oh,
on the
nice. Movie. I didn't go that far.
I just rewatched it this weekend too.
Nice. All right, so you guys will be able to keep my.
I was able to squeeze it in sections.
You guys will be able to get my facts straight then, because I haven't watched it. I don't know, since I bought it for that Christmas that one year.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That was 2 years ago.
Yeah. But I think I remember the highlights.
You remember, there was only one Starfighter left. That's all you need to know.
Yeah. all right. Let's see. Just checking to make sure we are recording. Good. Okay. Let me do the intro here.
This is 80 Something Podcast.
Banzai!
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 Hey, where's the meat?
I don't think there's anybody back there.
You or any of your family ever seen a spook, specter, or ghost?
If the answer is yes, then don't wait another minute. Pick up your phone and call the professionals. Go Ghostbusters! Our courteous and efficient staff is on call 24 hours a day to serve all your supernatural elimination needs.
We're ready to believe you!
Now we know.
And knowing is half the battle.
G.I. Joe!
Be it to each other. And party on, dudes!
Hey everybody, this is the Banzai Retro Club. I am Dave. Welcome back. Online, I've got Scott.
Hey everybody.
And we have special guest from infinitecoolness.com, Creed.
Hey, how's it going?
Thanks for joining us, Creed.
Oh, I'm glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
Here's what happened, just so everybody's aware and up to date, and if you're not on the that big bad thing we call Twitter, a little while ago, I sent this link out to everybody to say, what's your favorite retro sci-fi movies? And, you know, so I included a few links. And Creed actually responded with the iconic Last Starfighter. So right then when I saw that, I was like, hell, we need to get this guy on the show to talk about this movie. So, you know, of course I sent immediate response to him via our Twitter DM and said, hey, are you on board for talking to us? And here he is. So thank you for that.
Ta-da!
So why Last Starfighter? Why is that a big deal for you?
It's just a classic. It's and actually, the story is so classic. I was thinking about it when I was watching it. The story is so classic that they redid basically the movie with Galaxy Quest, and that's a classic of its own age. Like, you know, of a different age, but they used basically the same story. Like, it's just such an iconic story that the movie is memorable. And it was so well done, well casted, well put together for the time. It was just, it's an excellent movie.
Yeah, I know, Scott, you and I, we have, and Creed, I'm sorry that I'm not lumping you in on this because I haven't talked to you that much. But I know Scott and I, we're all about, like, the retro arcade games. And so, you know, there's many things that we're talking about, like PC games and the retro arcade games. This movie played right into the fantasy that you had when you went into those 80s arcades and you plunk in all those quarters trying to play these games. And then to know that you got to a certain level or you beat the game and then you could go up to outer space. I mean, are you kidding me? Of course this is a great movie.
Yeah.
So, Scott, I know that, like 2 years ago, I sent you the DVD of this movie. So you say you've watched it since then.
I just watched it recently. I hadn't watched it in a long time. Forgot a lot of parts. You know, as I was watching it, it all came back to me. And it was a lot of fun. Now, this came out in 1984, summer of 1984. And I was 16 at the time. So I was very into video games because what me and my buddy would do, we worked as pizza delivery guys. Even when we were 16 going into 17, we worked for pizza delivery place that was only open at night. And we'd go work from like 5 to 9 or 5 to 10. And then we would take all of our tips, which were mostly, you know, you get a lot of change in tips when you're delivering pizza back in the day because everything was cash. So you would take, you know, all of your quarters. And just like in the Pac-Man song, got a pocket full of quarters and I'm heading to the arcade. We would go just about every night to this one arcade that had a lot of the best games. And so when this, you know, this movie was probably, I don't know if I saw it in the theaters. I probably saw it in like on VHS a year or so after it came out. So this would have been falling right into place with that time frame of me being constantly at the arcade. We also had an arcade just up the road from us that before we started driving, we would just ride our bikes up there and, you know, park the bikes and spend hours at that arcade also. So this, the timing for this movie for me, the plot line was very exciting and adventure, you know. I'll give you more of my thoughts on the actual movie after I've watched it 40 years later. So, that's about where I was with this movie, why it stood out for me as an important movie in my history.
You know, I related in so much to Alex, you know, because I too came from like a small town. So the whole fantasy of having, you know, this adventure that would take you out of the confines of your little community. You know, he had a trailer park, but me, I had, you know, this small town in Florida. So to me, this kind of played along those lines where I was like, yeah, you know, something big can happen just by playing a friggin' video game. And, you know, of course it never did, but, you know, the movie helped give that kind of fantasy and played into it. Along with just the aspects of, you know, how cool it was to, you know, to kind of put your heart and soul into this thing that you're just passionate about, and then it turns out to be something greater than you anticipated it to be. So really love the movie and all aspects of it. Something that as I've gotten older and I have rewatched it like at least a few years back, is, and this is something that I'm glad you're on for to talk about, Creed, because being a person that really will recognize the artistic you know, work that goes on behind, you know, let's say film. You know, this was kind of the first representation of like something that where they're really trying to use CGI in the movie. And if you rewatch it now, can you see that where you're like, ah, that really wasn't as good as like a modern day movie? Or do you give it a pass because it has kind of this history with you?
Well, it gets a pass. You do notice it. I mean, you watch it and it looks now almost like if they sent out an unfinished movie and they're like, this is a placeholder and this is where the ship would go.
Right.
But I mean, they ran it at the time, and they did it on a Cray supercomputer. Like nobody could do this in their home or even a small business at the time. So they did a miracle for the time. So you have to give it a pass. And you know, they did something like, I think it's 24 minutes of special effects for this movie, something like that, which is like blow people's minds. And that's why like people that heard you could do that are in ILM now. Like, so yeah, this, you have to give it a pass. You have to go, okay, there's a ship and it doesn't look crappy. It just, you know, doesn't look real. That's all.
I agree. It doesn't necessarily look real, but I thought it was pretty impressive graphics. Cause as far as the timeline goes, going back to that time,
it's before most of the, like, they were writing the software to come up with this. Like, so they didn't even have like a package they opened and went, here, and this will make a ship. They had to invent it all. That's crazy.
Right. Well, like, you know, I think they probably took a lot of the technology from Tron, because it had a lot of the same feel as the Tron, type graphics, the computer, the CGI stuff. Very straight lines, very crisp. It reminded me as I was watching it today. I'm like, wow, that's got a lot of Tron in it right there. Yeah. And Tron was what, 82, I think.
Sounds
about
before
right. It was before this. So here's the timeline for this also. Is this, even though this was released in July of 83 or 84, you got to think, but back then the computer programming of 24 minutes of graphics for that, like that, took months and months of preparation and programming to get it to look like that. Now, I've seen a couple like random documentaries on that type of CGI from back then. And it just seemed to take a lot of time to put that much graphics into it. So it's got to kind of be right around the same time Tron was being made. And they must have, you know, have been working with people that in the industry, because everybody kind of copies each other, right? They get this same texture feels and just.
They're learning off each other at the time.
Absolutely. So that's kind of how I felt about it. That's one of the things I took away from it too, watching it again. As far as the graphics go,
it says in the making of there's a little thing where they were like, okay, we worked out the math on how long it takes to render each frame and how many frames we need to render, and they said like, we have this deadline. They're like, well, that math is way past this deadline. And then the people came to them and said, well, we have models. We can shoot all this and have it for your deadline. And they were like, nope, we're doing a computer. So they had like an easy way out to just skip it and not do a computer. But so like somebody has to be first. I think that's cool that they did it that way.
That is cool. Did they say how long it actually took?
Graphics? Like, I think it was something like the guy said, I'm not positive on the number. It was something like 16 months when they thought they had six.
Wow.
Or something like that. You know,
yeah.
And that just mathematically.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's what I'm saying. That, you know, it really is really being made in 1982, 83 before this thing ever really saw the film or saw the screen. So it was impressive for the time, for sure, to me.
Now, have either of you taken this film and showed it to somebody that's younger?
No.
I try not to show all the coolest things to little kids because they're not dazzled by stuff like that I like.
Yeah, because I think that's the crux I'm in, because my kids have grown up with seeing movies like The Avengers, the newer Star Wars movies, and I whip out something like The Last Starfighter. It's tough to I understand exactly what you guys are saying, and I get that, you know, this was groundbreaking for its time. And at the time, I thought it was the shit. But now it's like, as comparison to what they see on the screen now, it's like not a fair comparison. And it's almost like it doesn't get a fair shake because of how it looks. So that's why I was asking that question. I didn't know. It's like something that I've kind of wrestled with, where I was kind of like, you know, there's those movies that just look like their time. And this does look 80s. But in my mind, that's not a bad thing to say. But it could be for somebody that's used to something that's a little bit more cleaner and realistic, if that's fair. Okay, so not to beat up this movie at all. That's not my intention. I want to talk about some of the good stuff about this movie. So I guess if you guys had to pick a favorite scene from the movie, Creed, what would be your answer? Still there?
All right, let's try it again.
No, I think I got Scott is not on yet. Come on, Scott.
God, love the internet.
Yeah, I know, right? Jesus. And here I was, just going along really well, and then all of a sudden I'm like, I'm talking to nobody.
You were gone, then you came back after like seemed like forever. It was like he's still on.
Okay, I'm back too now.
Yeah, I was just completely.
Y'all missed Dave's monologue.
And that's all I got to say about that.
All right, I can't argue, Dave.
all right, so moving on.
You sound better though. Oh, well, better now.
Outstanding. So we just had to end Skype and then restart it. Fantastic.
Yeah.
Fuck you, Microsoft. Hopefully. Fuck you. Sorry. Did I say that loud? I didn't mean to say that loud, did I?
You should bleep that out just to be funny.
all right. Let me just make sure I'm recording again. I am. Okay. Favorite scene. Creed, what do you got?
I got to say off the top of my head, when Centauri turns around in the car and he sees alien face, I'm just like, yeah, that sets it up. But he doesn't have to be the alien through the whole show.
Yeah.
But it just like, it gives it that little bit instead of it's not just people in a car. Excellent. I like it.
Cool. What about you, Scott? What's your favorite memorable scene?
Oh, man. I don't know if I have a favorite scene anymore. It seemed a lot weaker overall, the overall movie for me. So I think the initial, like Creed, the initial impact of that he's been, you know, taken by an alien that's going to take him off to this place to fight this, you know, war, and he's still not getting it. But I think that's the excitement part of it, you know. I don't know if I can pick like a favorite scene. I like the whole movie as a whole.
Right.
But it was weaker than I thought it was.
What do you mean by that? Weaker than you thought it was?
I always thought this was such a cool movie back in the day. And watching it, like the end battle scene.
Right.
Just way too easy. Way too easy. You know, oh, okay, let's just do the Death Blossom. Okay, it's all over. We're all good. Everything's cool.
I Death Blossom. When I first saw Men in Black and they said, here, don't touch that thing, I said Death Blossom.
I think the concept of the movie is outstanding. I love the idea. I love the fantasy of it. But the overall watching it this many years later doesn't exactly hold the water that I thought it would. Also the dialogue is really, really weak. I don't know. It's just very simple. I guess it's, you know, it hit its target audience though. You know,
you are actually
complex. What?
You're echoing exactly what my wife Patty said before I came upstairs.
What did she say?
No, she was saying she's exactly what you're saying. She was saying the fact that it was like it was okay back in its day, but then rewatching it now, it's kind of like, You know, that wasn't, it wasn't as, it's like, it was good in the, you know, the top shelf of your brain. You know, she didn't say this, but this is me paraphrasing, you know, much like I've said before. And it's maybe one of those things that you don't necessarily need to dust off and, like, you know, rewatch. It's okay right where it was, up there in that memory bank, and just kind of let it sit there. And, you know, because it was a beautiful thing back then. And then rewatching it now, it's kind of like, oh, why did I like that so much as I did? You know, and it's not like you don't hate, it's not like you hate it.
No, it's not that at all. I remember thinking it was so much cooler back then, like, you know. And I may sound contradictory, like, I'm saying that the graphics were good, but I preface that by saying, or, you know, I cap that off by saying at the time.
Right.
But overall, you know, I still like the movie. I still love the concept. I mean, you know, it was really one of the inspirations for Ready Player One.
Yeah.
And that was just spectacular, book wise. The movie could have used a little bit of help, but that whole idea, that line of using retro and going back and thinking about how much fun we had at the arcades playing video games and remembering specific ones, you know, that always stood out for you, certain video games, whatever. And I'm going to a place that's like, I remember my grandparents used to take us camping, and they had an RV, and we ended up at these campgrounds, and they would have like the pool table and one or two video games, and one was usually broken and the other one was, you know, a couple years old. But it had that when he's up at that little, you know, lunch stand or whatever it is, or shop or store or whatever they have right there where the arcade is, I can feel that, you know, from back then.
Right.
But yeah, the dialogue and stuff was really, I just thought it was really weak, especially Grig.
I like Grig a lot. I think it's just his corny laugh that he just like gave the character, and instead of, because he has no backstory or anything, he just gave him a laugh, but it works. It filled in everything I need to know about him. He's a good guy.
Just a good old guy.
I liked when Alex was on the machine and it was starting to go good for him. And then people are realizing, like, oh, he's going for the record. Hey, he's going for the record. Everybody, he's going for the record. I had a very almost like a similar thing happen to me when I was a kid. I was playing Atari 2600 in my house. And I'm playing Defender because that's the one that was boxed with my machine. And that's the one I spent the most time on because that's the one I had for the longest time. I was playing it, and I was getting close to rolling the score. And, like, people in my family know, like, everybody in the house gather around and watch me roll the score. And I was waiting. I'm like, what's it going to do? This is amazing. I'm gonna reach 99999. I can't remember how many numbers were even in there. But it was going to get to all nines, and I was waiting to see. It got to all nines. It went to zeros, and then it went to one again. And I was like, oh. You don't say. All right. I guess I expected something that's not yet invented. A cool ending for a video game.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that was funny. As he finishes the game and breaks the record, it says record breaker right there on it.
Yeah.
You know, I thought that was kind of funny.
And I love that they didn't just use like a stock cabinet with some artwork on it. Like, it's all contoured and whatever. It's a cool cabinet.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, with the controls, the special controls that it had to control the right hand controller and left hand controller, two different things going on.
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah.
You gotta admit, that is really a unique way to like recruit people. You know, to make this video game and then like send it out to all these different planets and just sit back and kind of monitor and see how well everybody's gonna do. I thought that was kind of a brilliant concept to, you know, introduce into the movie.
Well, they even said to Centauri, they're like, oh, you're doing the old Excalibur trick again, referencing that I guess he was the guy that put Excalibur out in the first place or something. I don't know, but he's like, no, that's not this. This is a video game.
Yeah.
Well, did you guys catch when Centauri was first talking about what how he sent it off somewhere? It was supposed to go to Vegas originally.
And it
was a mistake and went to this trailer park instead.
Early on in the movie, that's the one thing that was kind of mentally ruining for me. I'm like, you don't send a recruiting device to where there's four people. So it was like ruining the movie for about 5 minutes. I was like, this plot hole's bugging me. And then they answered. I'm like, well, that's a relief. All right. Enjoyment continues.
Well, at least they acknowledged it. So,
yeah.
You know, and then the big bonus to this whole movie is Catherine Mary Stewart.
Oh, yes.
You know.
Thank you. I was wondering who's going to be the first person to bring that up.
Yep. Total crush on her. You know, if I lived in a trailer park and I don't know if I'd want to leave if she was around either.
She has that kind of look that you think she's in a thousand other things, but she's not in
She's really not. She hasn't been in a lot of things. I mean, I remember her mostly from Night of the Comet.
Yeah. I was about to say that one. Yeah, definitely.
With Kellan Yaroni.
Yeah.
There's something about her that I just really, I like her. I think she's got she really does have like the girl next door feel, you know, look to her. She's got that look going for her. She's, she's just something special. So it was nice to see her in this movie too. And can I go on a little tangent about something that I completely forgot about?
Well,
years ago.
Just hold on 1 second. I just wanted to bring up that one of my favorite scenes was the one where Alex has been replaced, and he has the beta that was, and he like takes his head off and he's like doing maintenance on his head, and his little brother's like, oh my god, he's like, go back to bed.
Go back to bed.
Yeah.
I have to put down as my second favorite scene when the beta unit's still forming and like somebody talked. I think it was his girlfriend come in, talked to him a little bit, and then she leaves and the blanket comes off and you see the plastic face just inflating like a plastic bag.
Yeah.
Still,
yeah.
I was like, that's awesome.
All right, Scott, you're allowed to tangent now.
When I thought about this movie, you know, after you sent it to me on the DVD and just thinking about it in the past, I like completely blocked out most of the movie where it took place back on Earth with Beta Alex.
Okay.
Like I completely forgot about that for the longest time. And then it started coming back to me slowly as I watched. I'm like, oh, that's right. They replaced him with another dude. And then I started having these, the memory images coming back to me, like that scene where they, like Creed just said, where they pull back the blanket and it's like this creepy plastic dude that's still forming into the new Beta or the new Alex. And then the scene when they're somewhere driving off to, you know, going up to the lake or whatever. And the Beta Alex is in the back of the truck with Maggie, and he's has no look on his, you know, he has no expression on his face, and they're telling some funny story. And she's like, why are you acting so weird? He's like, how should I act? She said, shouldn't you be laughing or something and having a good time?
Yeah.
And so he just starts really like fake laughing, and it was so I totally forgot about that, but it's so funny, that one scene. I like totally blocked out that whole him being replaced on Earth while he was out fighting this thing. I don't know why, it like just slipped my mind. That's what happens when you hit your 50s. So, anyway, I just wanted to throw that out there that I totally forgot about the whole Earth thing and the interaction between him and Maggie, or Beta, Alex and Maggie, and
right, that stuff. Right.
Yeah.
Some of the stuff I was reading said that when they were making the movie, they added more of that stuff in because it was working out well. So I guess somebody liked it.
Yeah. No, I like that. I like the idea because they had to try to, you know, have him fit in. Which I think they could have even added more scenes of him trying to fit in. You know,
that's cheap and easy sci-fi thing. He's a robot, but he looks like this guy. Okay.
Yeah.
There. Exactly. Just act weird. You know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Insert Lieutenant Commander Data. So. So the topic that we're talking about earlier, I'm really curious. Creed, is there any movie that was the shit when you watched it way back in the 80s or, you know, when you were a kid that now when you've revisited it, you're like, how did I like this?
Not really movies, because usually if I like a movie, my brain latches onto it and you can't shake me off. But and actually, very little stuff do I watch that, like, if I'm still in childhood love with it, then I'll still love it. The only thing I can think of off the top of my head would be the show Dracpack, which I love the concept for characters. But when you watch it, it could be so much more. That's all. I don't want to insult it because I'm in the process of drawing every character from it. But like that's the only thing I can think of off the top of my head that doesn't stand up, because I'm not one of those doesn't stand up kind of people. I'm living like it's 1984.
Okay. And the reason why I bring that up is because Scott and I have had this conversation, and we really just ripped all over Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom. Ripped all over that movie. And it's like one of those things where in my brain as a kid, it was an okay movie, but then rewatching it, it was like, are you kidding me? How did I like this? So I didn't know if there was something like that for you.
Very, very few, because I'm one of those guys that he's like, he still loves that. It's like, did somebody tell him that's not good? It's like, no, it doesn't matter.
Scott, I knew you'd enjoy me bringing that up again.
Oh, dude, I love that. Was one of my favorite shows when we recorded that. And it's not very often that we destroy movies.
Yeah.
In fact, I can't think of more than two that we might have done that to, but I mean, we leaned pretty hard on Temple of Doom.
Yeah.
But it was so much fun. It really was. It was a lot of fun doing that stuff. So
yeah, I don't think that you have to you don't have to like everything from back then. I mean, I think it's fair to have your own opinion and your own thought process. So I'm completely online with having something. Well, even, you know, the beloved movies, you know, even if you're one of those where you're like, oh my God, everybody really loves, I don't know, you know, like for instance, Scarface. We all love Scarface, but then Rose gets on and she's like, are you kidding me? And
your favorite's always somebody's most hated movie.
Yeah. So it's completely okay to have that kind of dissenting opinion in my brain.
Makes the world more interesting.
Yeah, definitely. And we've definitely had those discussions, like with music, because everybody has their own preferences and their personal tastes. Speaking of which, Creed, what is your, in the 80s, what was your favorite genre of music?
Would have been anything done by Weird Al for quite a number of years.
You just made a fan in Scott right there.
I only listened to Al. I had Al tapes in my jacket with my Walkman and no other tapes until at least after UHF at least. So half the 80s was just me and Al tapes, and I had every song memorized and nothing like Al. Yeah, gotta go with Al.
How would you feel if I told you I've never seen UHF?
I wish I had never seen it just so I could watch it again for the first time. You're a lucky guy.
What an answer. That's a
statement.
That is bold. Like
that's, I wish I was in your spot right now. I'd be firing it up. That's all there is.
Dude, that is a great answer. Oh, that's classic. Yeah, I saw UHF a long time ago. I loved it. I love Michael Richards' little bit in that movie was funny.
He was genius in that. I have elementary school pictures of me, and there's like all these kids, and one guy's wearing a super wacky shirt. Guess who that is? All elementary school, I dressed like Weird Al. Like,
did you have the crazy fro though? Crazy curly hair.
I had straight hair, but
yeah.
No, I always went with like the wackiest shirt I could find at any store sold in my area, and they were like I was well known as the wacky shirt guy, which is strange because I'd say probably at least 20 years now I only wear black and I don't wear stuff on my clothes. It's just weird. Like I don't know, it's weird. Yeah. Yeah, I used to dress like Al. That's how much of a fan I am.
So,
and actually, I have an amazing idea. I had this idea for a poster I wanted to draw for a long time for my favorite song, Nature Trail to Hell. But I think what I want to do is like the killer, the cabin, the woods, whatever. But you want to see like the rain-soaked killer above the trees, and I want it to be new Al, like how he looks now. He's the perfect killer for his 80s, like, you know what I mean? I don't know. I think that's a cool idea.
Yeah, no, that is a good one. I like that.
His current Al looks kind of creepy compared to his 80s. So, you know, pour some rain down his face, and you got like the killer from Nature Trail to Hell Part 2. I mean, Nature Trail to Hell.
Well, how old is he now? He's got to be close to 70, 65.
Probably. You're scaring me now. I don't want to watch the news anymore. What the hell?
Yeah, I don't know. I'm going to have to look it up. So I have to try to.
He's 60.
60?
Yeah.
He's only 8 years older than me. Okay, wow.
1959 is when he was born.
All right. By
the time he's 80, they'll have him a nice robot body, and we'll always have Al. That's excellent.
So we did – we had a guy on I think this was back in the 80s reboot overdrive, though. We did an Al Weird Al episode.
Yeah. I think that was back in the 80s reboot. Yeah.
If I can dig up a copy of it, I'll copy in on it, Creed. You can check it out. It's actually a pretty fun show. It was me and Rose, and we had a special guest on who is a complete Weird Al, just total fan, over the top. It's like his favorite artist of all time. Kind of sounds like you.
I am, and I like most of his like non-parody stuff is all my favorite stuff. So
was that really? Skipper? Was that his name?
Yes, yeah, Skipper.
Okay,
Skipper.
Yep.
Yeah. Why, you got a handy?
No. I don't. I just remember that for some reason. Wow. I remembered Skipper Martin.
Yeah, it's Skipper Martin, and he's a cartoonist as well. He draws a. He has a. What do you call it? An online animated comic book, I guess you call it. Did. Yeah, and he did that, and he's very talented too. But he also does as his regular job. He's a video colorist, it's called.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, so I can't remember exactly what that means, but he's been in that world, you know, out in California for a while. So,
yeah, anyway, speaking of music, because the soundtrack of this movie sounded really, really good. So I'm like, okay, it must be one of the, like, you know, the 10 names, whatever. It's going to be the guy who did Star Wars or something. So I looked it up, and it's by this guy, and he hasn't really done much else. Like, this is his biggest thing he did. He did some stuff on Cheers that he won awards for, and then he did, like, Amazing Stories and, like, The Twilight Zone in the 80s. That's about it. But really good music on this movie.
You know, it's funny. I do know – I recognize that the soundtrack or the score, the musical score is very it does have a good quality to it. It flows well with the whole sci-fi feel.
Oh yeah.
Of a space adventure.
And I'm sure they used it for like probably 100 trailers after this that you don't notice.
Yeah,
they probably did. Yeah. So overall, this movie still is. I still like it, even though I said that it didn't hold up as well as I thought it would. It's still something that's part of my nostalgic love, and I still have to give it a 2 thumbs up as far as a good movie goes. For somebody from our era, you know, somebody that would relate to it from our age group.
Did you guys realize that Will Wheaton is in it?
Oh, no.
What?
Will Wheaton is in that movie. He is one of the friends of Alex at the park. He has no lines whatsoever, but there's like maybe
this is his best work.
Ouch. Ouch. Wesley.
Oh my god.
Oh my god, that hurts. Dude, I'm a Will Wheaton fan. Come on.
I have stopped watching things because they're like, now featuring this guy, and I'm like, oh, Wesley, no.
Okay, what about Stand By Me?
that's kind of a, I don't know, like, yeah, he's not himself, and that's all, it's good, but.
Because that's pre Wesley.
Yeah. I don't know. I kind of got a dislike for him because of Wesley, and then I got a dislike for him with his whole, I don't know, his nerdy shtick that he's trying to do. It just, he comes across obnoxious to me. It's just me, though.
But, oh, wow. Okay.
Videos that he does.
Yeah. Yeah.
Videos of game reviews, board game reviews.
Board game reviews and stuff like that.
And everybody
right.
loves them, so it's fantastic, but just not me.
you're entitled. So, yeah. Understood.
Speaking of tiny little appearances, everybody see Gul Dukat as the Zandozan for like 30 seconds?
No.
Yeah, it was, how come I don't have that written here? But it's the guy that played Gul Dukat on DS9. He was, when he pulled up, and then the machine changed him into the Zandozan when he got scanned, like, so you couldn't see his disguise. His disguise was Mark Alamo, and that was Gul Dukat from DS9.
Oh, wow. Mm. Very cool. I didn't even realize that. That's one of these things. It's like this movie's got layers of it that you never, you don't realize until, like, you know, years later.
Yeah.
Very cool. Can you do the greeting, Creed?
Not on the spot. Damn, I, like, 3 seconds ago I caught up. Let me see.
Don't look it up. Don't look it up. Come on.
No, I'm not. I'm just staring into space here. Greeting, Starfighter. You have been recruited by the Star League to defend the
frontier.
The frontier.
Normally I'm snappy with that, but
against her and the Kodan Armada.
Yes. Yep. And
you were close.
The cool thing I found was that Zur is the president's son. I think is pretty cool.
To me, that just, if I hear that, like that sequence, you know, greeting Starfighter, and if you could just follow that up with Ready Player One, I'm locked in, dude. That's exactly all you got to do for me. I'm like, yep, we're there. We're in the 80s. Let's rock and roll. So is there anything else about this movie that we want to talk about? Scott, you got anything on your brain?
No. You know, I think I voiced my opinion of how I thought it was a little bit weak as far as like the depth of the plot line. I like the overall feel of the movie, the overall idea of the movie, the concept. But it ended up like that. Just the whole ending was
too easy.
It was anticlimactic, really. Like, okay, just hit that one button and everybody dies. And it's like the smart bomb on Defender, right?
Yeah. Like Voltron's sword. Will he use the sword? Oh, wait. Well, yeah.
Of course he will.
It's like, why didn't we start off with that?
Yeah. So, you know, overall, I don't really have anything else to add. I think, I enjoyed watching it again, though. I'll say that.
Okay.
Yeah.
What about you, Creed? Any party thoughts?
I have a couple of things I wrote down here that I haven't. Let's see here.
Oh, great. Someone else that takes notes. Fantastic.
Yes. My God. That's just so I don't sound as stupid.
Scott's the nose guy. I'm not, so I'm too random.
I just found the scene where, okay, he gets there. And he doesn't understand. They're talking to him in alien language. I found it very like the first episode of Farscape. So I was like watching because I didn't remember how they handled it. Like, because eventually, you know, he's not like, I don't understand. He just understands. So, but they take like a little chip and they pin it underneath the collar of his shirt. And I was like, okay, that's all right. That works. That's real 80s style. You know, here's a circuit board with a bare circuit board with some stuff hanging off. We're just going to stick that to your clothes. And then,
but what happens when he changes clothes?
Well, he better remember that if he washes that, and that's an expensive deposit to get another one. Like he doesn't even have any of their money, so it's a whole, you know.
Well, you mean? Oh yeah, he didn't hit up a currency exchange before he went up there. You're right.
You know, so yeah. He better, you know, yeah. I don't know. He better just keep wearing the same clothes, which doesn't seem to be a problem. And then, there's a thing in it, just a tiny little note, but like, I think if somebody was going to make a sequel, I think this would be something to hook onto, is about all the simuloids. And if this whole, if they have all these simuloids, how come they're not fighting? And it just says in it, there's just a little note. Can't remember who was talking to who, but they said, oh no, simuloids aren't allowed to fight. And so like, you know, why? Like, just, that solves a lot of stuff.
Right. Exactly. You can just make a whole bunch of them. And
clones were allowed to fight in Star Wars, right?
Yeah. Although that solves a lot of stuff, including the use for this movie. So, you know. Solved. Oh, damn it. And hey, then
I'm sorry,
the last thing is just how the whole alien race looked like a cross between Minbaris and Whoville.
Whoville.
Yeah, you like the everybody and what they called the what was the name of the race or the planet that they that they're from? But not, they all had
on his license plate, but I can't remember.
They all had like Romuloid or something like that. That's something else. That's a different sci-fi. They all had like this male pattern baldness thing going on, even the women.
It's a lot like that race who runs the Federation in the movies. Like, you ever see those? They have those, that poofy who hair.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
The who hair. I like that.
So there was one quick little nugget that just popped in my mind as Creed was talking. He brought up something about the lapel pen being the translator. Kind of an interesting, like, prophetic type thing, you know, that like a glimpse into the future, because you can take your phone and have somebody translate, you know, the words for you now. And then another thing that I caught, and just something jumped out at me towards when Grig and Alex were kind of bonding, and Grig pulls out this little device that has a photo on it of his wife, and then he starts flipping through it like a little like your photos on your iPhone or your you know, Android or whatever, your cell phone. And I'm like, wow, that's really a glimpse into the future, because they have a digital photo thing that has all their photos right there on it, you know, him and his 600 kids or whatever he has.
Yeah.
And, you know, and Alex pulls out this little piece of paper with his family and his you know, and his girlfriend on it. And I just thought that one little moment of them showing him with this little device that showed all his pictures, it's a little digital frame that he had. Yeah. I thought it was just kind of a cool little glimpse, you know, for what was to come, even though this was way before that. Way before that was even, you know, possible.
Before anybody owned a digital picture of anything.
Right. Right. You know? Exactly. Exactly. So just a little nugget I thought was kind of fun.
You got to wonder if the people that, you know, the good people over there at Apple or Google or whoever it is, you know, that's making the translator app, were they watching a movie like that and going, you know, shit, we should be able to do that with German.
Yeah, right.
I'd forgotten all about those pieces of it. But you're right. It's... You know, a lot like watching like the old, you know, Star Trek, where, you know, you see like the communicators and all that. And then, you know, every time I ever, you know, we were using Blackberries all the time, I always thought, shit, these are just like communicators from Star Trek. You know, and you even got that, you know, and I was like, well, that's kind of pretty much what I was waiting for, you know, and, you know, I'm just waiting for somebody to be able to beam me up. But that hasn't happened yet.
Yeah, that reminds me of the phones that were, had to be about a good 10, 15 years ago. The Direct Connect phones, where it would be like a walkie-talkie?
Yeah, yeah, the Blackberries.
Was that the Blackberries that were Direct Connect?
Yeah.
Or you just hit a button and it...
Two of them had that, I think.
Yeah. I remember that was like the most annoying sound, too.
there was this guy that I worked with that would hit the button... And then he'd immediately follow up with, are you out there? Before you even had a chance to respond to the beep. I was like, dude, come on. And then we worked at a cable company, and he always used like the 10 codes, like we're police officers, you know, like, what's your 1020? I'm like, dude, come on. We're computer techs. We don't need to be talking like that. So.
When I was long ago, I did receiving at Home Depot, and one of the gags I used to do on new people was I'd page them on the PA system, and I'd tell them to call 722 or something like that. But 7 is the number you hit for the PA system. So all you'd hear is so I'd say, oh, you know, Joey, call 722. And the guy didn't know any better. He's brand new. So all you hear is, and then you hear beep, boop. And then they hear all the regular staff laugh.
Love it.
Nice.
By the way, Rylands. That's what you were looking at for before.
Yes, thank you. Bramalama Ding Dongs.
Yes.
They really are.
All right, so it sounds like we're wrapping things up. So this is us talking about the Last Starfighter. This was on the Essential Movie episode list, so if you did hear that, this is going to be an extension of that as well. So I'm trying to even remember what I said back then, but it looked, when I went back to the list, it looks like it was 117, so that was a little while ago.
That was a while ago.
Yeah, considering now we're in the 80s. With everything that we've said, we just want to remind everybody that we have a website out there. It's BonsaiRetroClub.com. On that, you can get to our links for our social media, including Twitter, Tumblr. We don't do that much with Tumblr, but if you want to go out there, go for it. Facebook and Instagram. So please give us follows, interact with that. Creed has a kick-ass website, and he sells awesome shit with what he's doing with his drawings. Why don't you tell everybody about that, Creed?
Thanks. I'm mostly selling stickers, so instead of what people do with Patreon, they'll do like, oh, just give me a dollar. Instead of giving me a dollar, put in $5 to get yourself something cool. That's how I want to do it. That's just my way. So it's, if you're a retro maniac, you want cartoon characters, I have obscure, I have favorites, I have, you know, whatever I feel like drawing, and I'm always doing more stuff. So infinitecoolness.com, and follow Creed Stonegate on wherever you're creepily following people.
Creepily following people. Very well said.
Nice. That's good stuff.
And Scott's also on Twitter, so Scott, why don't you tell people where they can follow you?
I am at 80s Auto Reverse, and I try to stick to a lot of music stuff. So, Creed, it was fabulous talking to you.
This was a fantastic time. You guys are going to have me on again, and that's not a request.
I'm sure there's so many topics we can have you on with. So, anytime.
I live in the 80s. They say don't live in the past. No, I am the prime example. Go ahead. Enjoy yourself.
Yeah. And maybe take a look at that movie list that Dave is talking about, and you might want to chime in on another one.
I'll poke through and get hold of you guys. We'll do this again sometime. This is fun.
Yeah, on RottenTomatoes.com, that's the 1980s Essential Movies. So I've been working my way through from 140, working our way to number one. So there's going to be some good movies coming up. Definitely.
Oh, there's a lot of good movies coming up.
Yeah.
A lot of good ones.
Yeah, there were some dry spots there, but I think we're getting past through most of that.
Like Desperately Seeking Susan? Or no, wait. Baby Boom. That was the best one.
Don't listen. Do not listen to that episode.
So it's Creed. I don't know if you heard that one, but if you listen to the show at all, he did the, you know, in the 140 list, I don't know where Baby Boom fell into it. But he's way too high
on the list, I'm telling you, whatever it is.
Right, exactly. I mean, just it should not be in the 140 at all. But he starts...
I can find 10 that should not, like, why, how come this is here and not that, you know?
Right.
I feel the same way.
So Dave starts the show and says, I'm going to be reviewing Baby Boom, and I'm going to tell you right now, do not listen to this episode. Don't listen to this episode.
Don't listen to this episode.
Yeah.
So I know nothing. I see nothing.
You have to listen at that time.
Yeah. And like, you just reverse psychology everybody listening.
Well, that's not exactly the intended purpose. It really is the fact that I've got nothing on that one.
Then you have to say, nobody better give me $1 million either. Just in case.
Actually, that sounds good. Nobody give me $1 million.
There we go. Let me know how that
works. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, so this is part of the episode where we remind everybody, please be excellent to each other, and since we have no idea when you're going to listen to this, have a good whatever. Bye-bye.
Take care, everyone.
Bye.
This has been a Bonsai Retro Club production.
Bonsai, Danielson!
Hey, Bonsai!
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 Hello? Excuse me, son.
Store's closed, mister.
I'm not here for cigarettes or bubblegum, my boy. Can you tell me the name of the person who broke the record on that game over there? Where I might find him?
Alex Rogan. You're looking at him.
Alex Rogan.
Who are you?
Centauri's the name. I invented Starfighter, which is why I'm here.
It is?
It is. We have to talk about a matter of utmost importance. Step into my office.
That's it. Come on now. Nothing to be afraid of.
Oh, yes. Say hello to my assistant, Beta.
Howdy.
Ow! I must congratulate you on your virtuoso performance, my boy. Centauri is impressed. I've seen him come and I've seen him go, but you're the best, my boy. Dazzling. Light years ahead of the competition, which is why Centauri is here. He's got a little proposition for you. You interested?
I guess.
Hey.
What are you doing?
Listen, Centauri wants to keep it for a surprise. Trust me. Oh, you're gonna love it. Love it! The amusing thing about this, it's all a big mistake. That particular Starfighter game was supposed to be delivered to Vegas, not some flea-speck trailer park in the middle of tumbleweeds and tarantulas. So it must be fate, destiny, blind chance, luck even, that brings us together. And as the poet says, the rest is history.
Where are you going? Where are you taking me?
I told you. I want to save it for a surprise. Hey, are you the kind of kid who reads the last page of a mystery first? Who pesters the magician to tell you his tricks? Who sneaks downstairs to peek at his Christmas presents? No, of course you're not. That's why I'm not gonna tell you.
Oh, God.
Besides, I just love surprises, don't you?
Hey, look out! Stop!
Oh, dear.
Hit the brake! Hey!